What were the new technologies that would generate new requirements for the collection of foreign intelligence? How could NR, working with private sector partners, acquire this foreign intelligence? And how would the changing nature of espionage and war affect the private sector and vice versa? As the new chief of NR, how could I get an initial grasp on all this, going beyond the introductory briefings? As Mary Margaret Graham had told me, the answer to such questions, the key to NR success, rested first and foremost with U.S. private sector leaders. Chief Executive Officer. The CEO, a self-made multimillionaire and one of the leaders in his industry, sat in my NR office in CIA HQS. We had cleared him with security to visit. He had been there before. He was an important source and partner. He had been cooperating with the CIA for years. I had been on the job just a couple of weeks, and he was one of my first visitors. A tall, trim, fit gentleman, with gargantuan intellectual energy, he had trouble sitting still. I could not discern which was greater, his insatiable curiosity about the entire universe, or his enthusiasm for helping us collect foreign intelligence. With his mental RPM speed approaching the red zone, at one point, I thought he was going to start bouncing around my office. Somehow he managed to stay seated at the table. I joined him in a discussion of our cooperative efforts. He explained to me at great length how his global infrastructure platform benefited CIA operations. The assistance included cover for specific operational acts, access to foreign targets, both human and technical, and administrative support for specific operations. Was there anything this guy was not doing? He happily, proudly answered my many questions. He talked, and I took notes. After we concluded our operational review, he wanted to stay and chat. "What about Al-Qaeda? Why do they hate us?" he asked. "They are afraid of us, afraid of globalization and what it means to their perverted reactionary view of what their society should be. They fear that globalization and the free market principles and liberal values that come with it will bury them. They should be afraid. Globalization is accelerating. There is no stopping it. Of course, they disagree with our policies, especially in the Middle East." "But globalization is driven mostly by the private sector," he noted. "You bet. And that's why the private sector, irrespective of what country, has a critical role to play. The private sector, like Al-Qaeda and their affiliates, is a network of non-state actors. This network can often respond to a threat better than a government."
"What do you mean? Give me an example."
"Well, consider our response to 9/11. The only effective countermeasure that day didn't come from U.S. fighter jets, but from a handful of private citizens on United Flight 93. They collected intelligence from friends and family via their cell phones. They learned about the other aircraft being used as suicide attack vehicles. So they overpowered the hijackers and stopped the plane from smacking into Washington, D.C. Those patriots transformed themselves from passive passengers into a self-organized network of non-state actors. They saved hundreds, maybe thousands of lives. The U.S. government didn't save anybody that day. Another example is Afghanistan. Our allies were networks of non-state actors, tribal militia scattered all over the country. Clergy and businessmen also played an important role. Think of how AQ uses the private sector. They collect intelligence from websites. They case physical sites using tourist maps. They use companies as the means for acquiring operational funds, from employment or theft. They rely on private sector companies for their communication, transportation, and really their entire logistics chain. They use companies and non-governmental organizations, especially charities, for cover. And more, their targets are soft and non-state. Commercial aircraft, office buildings, train stations, hotels, and even cruise ships. The private sector is in this fight whether they want to be or not."
"That's frightening," my new friend noted. Yep. And that's why the private sector has an important role, especially in helping us identify terrorist networks. The private sector, whether a global infrastructure company like yours or a Waziristan shopkeeper, may have the intelligence to identify enemies, help us stop them, stop more attacks. This is why your cooperation is so valuable. His company had offices all over the world, and his employees could go anywhere. And because of the business's brand reputation and financial power, just about anybody would eagerly meet with his company representatives. His company served as a de facto global extension of CIA operations. He knew the risk to himself, his employees, and investors. He embraced it. It was his duty to serve, to protect his company and his country. He was grateful to the CIA for giving him this opportunity to contribute. I had never imagined that a CEO would look at his cooperation in such a way, at least to such a degree. The global commercial marketplace was his battlefield, and he served with duty and honor. In the following 2 years as chief of NR, I would see this pattern again and again. We talked for almost 3 hours. I knew that he was leaving for the West Coast. Had he lost track of time? This is a great conversation, but I don't want to keep you. I'm worried about you missing your flight, I noted politely. I'm not going to miss my flight, he responded with a quizzical look. Then he realized my mistake and started laughing. Not to worry, Hank. My plane won't leave without me. No, I responded. Of course, he had his own Learjet or Gulfstream 5 or whatever. I had a lot to learn about the American private sector elite. Come visit me, he said. I'd love to host you for lunch at my club. Yes, sir, you can count on it, I responded. And we did have lunch. It was a very nice club. University President. I met the university president in a hotel suite, rented under an alias by a local NR officer, in the same city as the university, but many miles away. We had taken a surveillance detection route to the meeting site. Tradecraft, I stressed to NR stations, did not end at the U.S. border. Handsome, with long hair styled just so, and sporting a blue blazer over a starched baby blue shirt, he looked more like a GQ model than a university president. His firm handshake and direct gaze were all business, however. I guessed that he was a perfectionist, driven, with minimal tolerance for stupidity or inconsequential discussion. After very brief preliminary introductions, and after I thanked him for his service as an educator and CIA partner, he jumped right to the point. Dismissing my thanks with a quick wave of his hand, he said, "I don't want Al-Qaeda or any terrorist group on my campus. The safety and security of my students and my staff and my obligation as a citizen outweighs any reservations that I have about cooperating with the CIA. We have radical Muslim students on campus, but we just don't know how radical or how extensive their reach overseas. Do you? We must find out." We briefed him on a couple of foreign students in his student body. Our brief was based on foreign liaison intelligence shared with us. We explained that the Foreign Liaison Service had a lousy human rights track record, and they tended to view all dissidents as terrorists. So we could not validate all the information. We needed his cooperation, and specifically access to one or two of his professors who knew these two students. Depending on more assessment, we may be interested in recruiting one of these students to return overseas and spy for us. We need sources like this, especially back in enemy safe havens. Would you help us? I asked. Of course. Who are the professors? We provided him the names, but noted there might be another one better suited. We just did not know. We will share any intelligence with the FBI, so we compliment their efforts. But of course, we will not identify you or any professors as our sources. That will always remain confidential. You're damn right. The FBI can't keep a secret. Those guys will swap a confidence for good press any day. And they are ineffective on campus. They show up, wave a badge, and their implied threats get them nowhere. Now, if there is a law enforcement issue, of course I will help them, but at this point, I see no laws broken. I do see a threat to my campus, and I see an intelligence agenda. You have my support. This guy got it. He understood the difference between intelligence and evidence, between the CIA and the FBI. The FBI disagreed. They had repeatedly demanded the identities of NR sources. I had explained that this was not possible, certainly not with U.S. citizens who refused to meet with the FBI even if we asked them. U.S. citizens had rights, including the right to cooperate confidentially with the CIA to protect the United States. The university president accepted his obligations